Thanks very much. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you to NACA for inviting me. I don't know about you, but I'm exhausted just listening to Flavio. Let me get a breath. Okay, so the brief I've been given is, discuss, is EMS a management problem? Question mark. And like with Flavio's presentation, you're going to see quite a lot of question marks in this presentation. What is EMS? Now, I'm going to disagree right away with Flavio here when he said, let's call it EMS, say HPNS, I don't care. I don't agree with that. And much like Tim was positing this morning, I think we have to be pretty careful about what it is that we're calling EMS or AHPNS. I think we have to be very careful about that. So early mortality syndrome, or EMS, you could say could be caused by a number of different things, environmental pathogens, toxins, management issue. And some of this appears to be caused by this new syndrome that has been named by Dr. Leitner, the AHPNS, but not all of it. There is a lot of thing that we can say is EMS, that is mass mortality at the beginning of the cycle in the first month, that we can quite justifiably call EMS, but that's not to say it's AHPNS. So I think we have to be pretty careful there. So the history, I don't really have to go along with this because it's already been described how it seems to have spread, or as Flavio pointed out, it seems to have occurred throughout the region, through China and then Vietnam and then Malaysia and now in Thailand. And it seems to be becoming more serious in some places than it has been before, particularly, for example, here in Thailand. And we're not really sure, really, if it's the same problem in all these different countries or not. But in some cases, the identification of this AHPNS syndrome has come out of this, but not in all of the cases. So GROW signs, we've talked about that in various presentations this morning already. Looking at data from Vietnam, from Malaysia, and from China, this is a list of stuff that I've come up with, what people have told me. Lethargy, slow growth, corkscrew swimming, loose shells, initially swollen but and then progressively shrunken hepatopancreas, which is pale, degenerating, less lipid droplets, and then finally this massive bacterial infection. But we've also seen soft, dark, and mottled carapace, white patches on the body, sometimes associated with white feces and foul gills, shrimp dying, and usually finding them on the bottom of the pond, not around the sides of the pond. And often, from a survey from Malaysia that were asked the farmers there, they associated with this mortality during the molting process, which is significant, as we'll talk about later on. And also, it's been noticed that the hemolymph clotting time of these animals gets extended over a minute and a half, indicating some stress agent on the shrimp. We've seen pictures already. It's just some more. And you can see here quite clearly, very early post-larvae, just after stocking, are already going down with this problem. And we get both the vanami and the monodon, and as we were discussing this morning, who knows what other species coming down very early on. So my thesis is that EMS, as EMS, EMS, not AHPNS, is not a new issue. It's just a new name. We know for a long time in culture, from this hemisphere as well as the other hemisphere, that during the first month of culture, we get mortality. And this has been called one-month syndrome before for this very reason. But, you know, we know that exists, and in many cases this may be getting confused for this new EMS syndrome. It's things that have happened for a long time that have killed shrimp that we're now pointing our finger and saying this is what it is. But, you know, over and above that, it seems that there is a new issue out there and that is very much more serious, and it's something that we haven't seen before. So we've seen many reports of EMS occurring throughout Asia, and we can call this EMS, but this may be due to undiagnosed or misdiagnosed diseases, stuff that we already know about, and poor management, whereas some of this, typically this thing that we're calling HPNS now, seems to be due to something new. We found in this 1 month that, you know, for a long time, newly stocked ponds generally start to accumulate organic material as you add feed. You get bad phytoplankton blooms, which are growing and crashing. We get an increase in the level of vibrios in the water, which tends to peak after 1 month. And the soil, if it isn't treated properly before we stock, starts to release nutrients from the soil, ammonia and nitrite and hydrogen sulfide, and all that begins to stress the animals. That increase in pathogenic bacteria causes stress, and if there's other environmental stresses, which can be many different things, and viruses in the system, which always occur, and rapid environmental changes, and poor management practices, all of this can lead to mortality, which can justifiably be called EMS. So is EMS just a worse expression of the existing problems out there, or is there something new out there that we haven't experienced before? This is the question. What appears likely, as we mentioned, is that due to the severity, the sudden onset, and the rapid spread of this new syndrome, that there is a particular subcategory of EMS, which we can call AHPNS, which is new, has specific characteristics that Dr. Leitner has already outlined this morning, and does indeed appear to be caused by some kind of pathological or toxic agent. But that's not the whole story. You know, there's other things that we're confusing on this EMS that we have to take into account. Moreover, if whether or not it is the normal, in inverted commas, EMS or this new AHPNS, in any case, we can expect that if we implement good management practices in the way that we are already doing in response to the other diseases that are out there, that we should be able to overcome this problem. It's just the latest in a long line of diseases that come up every year. Clinical signs, we're talking about that there is a specific case definition, both in the gross signs and the histopathological signs, that we can say this is AHPNS. I'm not going to go through this because this has already been covered this morning. The problem here is that many farmers, without access to good disease laboratories, when they have a mortality syndrome, they do not conduct a thorough analysis. They don't look at what is the real cause of this disease. In many cases, they see what disease is going around, what everybody is talking about, they point their finger and they say, that is what the problem is. And in this case, in many of these countries, we're talking about EMS or AHPNS now. And an example of that is this problem with IMNV that we know has been occurring in Brazil since 2002 and Indonesia in 2006. We've had many reports of this from around the region, from around Asia, and they've turned out to be false positives or incorrect diagnosis of IMNV. But many people are so worried about that disease that as soon as they see a bit of white muscle, they say, oh, it's IMNV, without any justification for it. And I think this is the same case in this instance as well, in some of the cases. So in the case of AHPNS, we really need to do histopathology, as well as looking at other potential sources of disease to be sure that what we're talking about really is AHPNS, or is it something else? So the questions that we should ask ourselves, is EMS caused by poor management or by a specific disease? Should it be renamed, as some people have said, BMS, bad management syndrome? In many cases, we could say yes, EMS is caused by BMS. In many cases, it is. But is BMS the cause of this subset of conditions that causes AHPNS or not? Or is that something else? And what are the causes and the potential solutions for EMS and AHPNS? And so what can we do to improve our management to survive in the face of these problems? So EMS, and I'm talking here about EMS, not specifically about AHPNS. So we've all heard already this morning, could be a pathogen, a virus, a bacteria, a microsporidium. Could be a toxin from algae, from pesticides, from another source that we haven't thought about. Or it could be purely due to poor pond management practices. If we talk about viruses, let's talk about white spot. You know, we've known that white spot causes disease in 20 to 30 days very commonly, particularly, you know, when you have cold weather conditions. And particularly when you have a combination of white spot and Vibrio in the pond, and when you're stocking in a cold weather or in periods of fluctuating water temperature. So many of the Chinese farmers that I've been in contact with are suggesting that a lot of this EMS that they're reporting is actually caused by white spot and Taura and yellowhead and other viral pathogens. And in the absence of any histopathology or other diagnostic work, we can never really be sure about that. But it looks like a lot of those losses that are being experienced right now are coming from these other causes. Bacteria. As I've said, the bacteria we know are increasing during the first month, and if the shrimp becomes stressed in other ways, that can cause problems. And we know that there is a heavy bacterial infection in the hepatopancreas during outbreaks of EMS. There was some implication of microsporidians in early days. There was a lot of investigation in that during the time of Flavio's investigation in Vietnam, but we now think that's probably not the cause. Algal toxins, particularly coming from blooms that get out of control of blue-green algae or dinoflagellates, this is always a possibility and in many cases can be causing some problem, but there is no proof of this yet. We haven't been able to replicate that in the lab. And pesticides. Pesticides have been blamed, particularly in Vietnam, but as Don explained, you know, if you can't replicate that in the lab and cause those same symptoms, then it doesn't look very likely that that is the primary cause. So, poor management practices. Now, in many cases, we can see that poor management leads to early mortality. There's many different ways that this can happen, particularly bad pond preparation. That means the lack of drying out the pond and removal of the accumulated organic sediments from the last cycle. Stocking in cold weather, not testing your post larvae before you stock them, not controlling your algal blooms properly, lack of screening of the inlet water, poor biosecurity, insufficient aeration for the biomass that you're trying to hold. That's particularly prevalent with people switching from culture of monodon to vanami without the necessary infrastructure. Use of poor quality diets, contaminated water supplies, overuse of potentially harmful chemicals, and a lack of monitoring control over bacterial populations. You know, all of these things can lead to stress and therefore mortality and mimic EMS. Already, Flavio has given some idea about the risk factors, and some of these risk factors are from his study, and some are from studies that have been done in Malaysia and communication that I've had from China. And in general, we could say that older farms close to the sea are more likely to be at risk. Poor farmers that don't do poor pond preparation properly are more likely to be at risk, particularly if you're not removing the sludge from the cycle before. Overcrowding of farms, sharing of water sources, overuse of chemicals, as Flavio mentioned, pesticides, antibiotics, chlorine, lime, all of those have been implicated. Intensification, you know, over-farming the area with a more intensive way than you can support. Seed transportation stress, poor seed quality. An interesting fact from a recent study in Malaysia was that over half of the farmers report that these fast-growing SPF shrimp seed were more likely to be affected than the slow-growing ones, and this may have something to do with the increase in molting rate of these faster-growing animals. And the shrimp dying during that molting period. High salinity at stocking, high and fluctuating temperatures, overstocking, overfeeding at the beginning of the cycle, and inadequate aeration. So all of these could be considered risk factors. And all of these are what you should really control by doing good pond management. In terms of what farms so far we've noticed that tend to be less affected, low salinity farms that under 20 ppt seem to be less affected in most but not all cases. Far from the sea, plastic liners. There's quite a lot of reports recently of these bioflock or semi-bioflock systems that the shrimp have a better chance of survival in. It might be something in the flock that is protecting them. Use of high quality seed. Especially we're hearing reports of this SPF monodon animals now that seem to be more resistant than the wild monodon seed. Strict control of early feeding rates, thorough pond and environmental disinfection protocols, by which I mean both for disinfecting from viruses and from bacteria, and use of high-quality probiotics and specific immunostimulants, and we're going to talk about that in a little while. Another thing we also don't know is what is the effect on wild shrimp fisheries. We have no idea if it's affecting the wild shrimp. So we know that if, you know, in all the other cases of disease, that if we implement good management practices, and that diagram that was put up before about the interaction between the host and the pathogen and the environment, If we follow the principles that we already know, we know even in the presence of all the major diseases that we're worried about, if we do this management properly and consider all these variables, then we can get a good production. We know those pathogens are already there. If we can minimize the introduction of pathogens and reduce the stress on the animals, we know that this is effective for treating all these other diseases, or for preventing all these other diseases, not treating. And there's no reason to think that this wouldn't be true also for EMS or AHPNS. So there are some recommendations already that have been published that are out there. And these include the following: good proper preparation of the pond environment, removing the sludge, drying the pond, controlling organic nutrient loading. Thorough disinfection of the water for both virus and bacteria in the reservoir ponds and in the ponds prior to stocking. Bioflock, you know, this tendency for bioflock systems to have a better result, and helping to control excess blooms of blue-green algae and dinoflagellates. If we are stocking in low salinity ponds, which tend to seem to offer some advantages, we have to take care of the mineral balance, because in very low salinity areas, you tend to get an imbalance in the mineral composition of the water, and that can lead to stress on the shrimp as well. So if we're going to do that, we have to take account of that and supplement the missing minerals into the water. The post larvae, if it's coming from the post larvae, make sure that we check the post larvae. Look at the condition of the hepatopancreas beforehand, use the right probiotics in the environment, in the hatchery, and use reliable known hatcheries that are producing good quality seed. Don't overstock. You know, base your stocking on the carrying capacity, whatever that might be, of your farm, and that will depend on the level of infrastructure that you have. If you're reaching the current capacity of the pond, do a partial or full harvest straight away. One of the things that have been emphasized by various workers is about the control of the feeding in the first month, and we've seen this also for other disease problems like the white feces syndrome that we've had here in Thailand for a while, is that we have to make sure we're not overfeeding at the beginning of the cycle, which leads to eutrophication of the pond, stress on the animal, and then can lead to mortality. And there is some indication from many of the farmers around the region that if you're using a good probiotic and in some cases immunostimulants, which I will talk about in a little while, we can protect the animal and help to prevent disease issues, not just from this particular case, but from other diseases as well. Maintaining the dissolved oxygen level. It's, you know, it sounds so stupid to say that, but in many cases, many farmers are not controlling the amount of oxygen. They don't even have a DO meter. And we know that the animals need a certain level of oxygen to survive and grow properly in the ponds. If you don't do it, you're asking for trouble. Try not to stock in cold weather or during periods of fluctuating environmental parameters, particularly temperature and salinity. And as I say, this tendency for these domesticated monodon stocks to have a good production may lead to some return to the culture of monodon in the region. I mentioned immunostimulants. There is some work that's been done in this year by a company called GS Biotech out of Malaysia, and they did some work in East Malaysia using their immunostimulant called Beta Defense, feeding it from day one throughout the cycle, which in this case was 78 days. And this immunostimulant is a mixture of lipopolysaccharides, beta-glucans, amino acids, and nucleotides that they have developed using a fermentation technique. And they've also found that this product previously has been quite successful at preventing outbreaks of white spot syndrome in Malaysia and the Philippines. So they stocked some farms earlier this year in East Malaysia with vanamai, 40 to 50 per square meter, and they got 80 to 90% survival rate, good food conversion and growth, good harvest, while the control ponds all had to be harvested within 50 days when they're only 11 grams with less than 50% survival. They're now doing another trial with this same product in West Malaysia, and they found that where they used that product from day one, from the first day of stocking, up until right now, which is at just over a month of age, one of the ponds went down to EMS, but the other three are still going strong. But where the treatment was started late, after 9 days, 9 to 12 days after stocking, all four of the ponds under this regime died between day 23 to 29 of EMS. What is not clear is whether it's AHPNS or just general EMS. And the control ponds, of which there were two, were both hit within 28 to 38 days and all died. Now, one of the problems with this trial was that they didn't give the correct dose of the product, which is 3 mL per kilo per feed every day. They only gave 20% of that, so they only gave the 3 mL for one feed out of the 4 they fed today per day. But even so, even at the low dose rate, if they gave it from the first day onwards, they got a good success. And so it appears that it can help to prevent EMS by using this kind of a product. Now, of course, in terms of the causes of EMS and AHPNS, this has already been dealt with. The research done mostly by Don in his lab found that it doesn't seem to be a virus. You know, we tried to detect all the different viruses, can't find any that we know of. TEM studies don't seem to come up with anything, so it doesn't look like it's a virus. It hasn't been possible to feed infected shrimp to non-infected shrimp and cause the same symptoms. There's no evidence for rickettsial problems. It doesn't seem to come from the feed. It doesn't seem to be a microsporidial origin. I don't need to go through this because Tim's already done this. This looking at the potential for different species of bacteria that we hadn't previously considered, this has been done. According to Dr. Chalor, who is here, and we'll be talking about this tomorrow, so really I should let him handle this. But he is looking at the possibility that these species of bacteria are used in the hatchery as part of the probiotic regime that's used in the hatchery. And as I think Tim mentioned this morning, a lot of the probiotics that are used, of which there are many, many different kinds, almost all of them are kind of unknown about which species of bacteria are in them. And that counts both for the hatchery and for the farm. And so I agree it's a very, very risky procedure to be putting in and brewing up all these different and unknown species of bacteria. Many of the companies figure that the more species you have at the higher level, the better it is, but that certainly seems to be a pretty risky practice. So it is possible that there is these bacteria originating from the hatchery that is infecting the shrimp, and once you grow the shrimp in the hatchery and then transfer them, stress them, transfer them into the pond, acclimate them there, that subsequently that stress is enough to trigger the disease to come on and kill the animal in the pond. So if we can eliminate these kinds of probiotics in the hatchery, it should help. In support of this, it has been shown that in some instances, post-larvae in the hatchery can be shown to have the classic AHPNS symptoms already. And if it is found in the post-larvae, this might explain how it's been transferred around the region. We know that it first occurred in China and then it appeared in Vietnam. We know a lot of post-larvae are coming from the Chinese hatcheries and going into Vietnam. It may also explain how recently, in the spring of this year, from West Malaysia, which has had it since 2010, it suddenly got into East Malaysia. And we know that East Malaysia imports post-larvae from West Malaysia. There's no proof of this, but it's a plausible theory. It doesn't explain how it got into Thailand, though, because Thailand tends not to import post-larvae from other countries. But it does use a lot of probiotics, and in some cases, pretty dodgy probiotics in the hatchery phase. There's some work done recently by a Malaysian National Fish Center as well, and they looked at infected shrimp from Perak and Pahang states, and they found colonization in the hemolymph with high concentrations of bacteria, including Vibrio and Photobacterium damseli, which used to be known as Pasteurella. And this, the disease caused by Pasteurella, or Photobacterium, has been known to have bad effects against various finfish species in culture. It's also known from Monodon in India, and we also associated it with mortality in juvenile and adult prawns in Vanamai prawns in Ecuador many years ago. So it's a known pathogen. We know also that fish can be long-term carriers of this, and it can be transmitted through the water. We also know it's difficult to eliminate this with antibiotics, and so far antibiotic treatments of EMS or AHPNS haven't been successful. This might be a partial explanation for that. There are tests by PCR and bacteriology that we can test for these, so it's possible to screen for these kind of bacteria. So in conclusion, what I would say is that there is a large but unquantifiable at the moment portion of EMS is likely to result from poor management. Although in the specific cases of HPNS, it does look like there could be a new pathogenic or toxic agent. However, whether it's EMS or AHPNS, by using better management, we can have some effect against it. We need to really look and find out what are the real causes of this syndrome and to be able to determine how it is spread and to develop the management tools which will enable us to overcome it. The possible role of potential pathogenic bacterial species and the possible role of bad probiotics needs to be investigated. Meanwhile, we should stop using those kind of probiotics. If you're not sure what's in your probiotic, it's probably a better idea not to use it. So the management methods that we use to reduce stress and the risks of all the kinds of viruses and pathogens that we have, we can employ those also to fight against this disease. We do know in some cases, ironically, that good quality probiotics have been used in animals that are affected by this syndrome and have been effective in the same way as the results of that research with the immunostimulant seem to point to some success from using that. So it's something that should also be investigated. We also need to make sure that we can train the staff in the hatcheries and in the farms on how to carry out these better management practices. We should also screen the post-larvae. If it really is coming from the hatchery, we need to be able to develop a test that we can find out whether or not they're infected with this problem already and screen out the ones that are so we're not stocking those into our farms. Movements of live shrimp stocks, which is likely the major cause of moving this problem from one place to another, need to be restricted until we can develop the protocols to screen for this particular case. So that we can try and prevent the further spread of this problem. And that's all I've got. Thanks.